The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
We have made our start. 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting from 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday evening Space Show program. And I'm your host, David Livingston. Thank you very much for tuning in. We have a terrific show tonight with one of our favorite guests, Dr. A.J. Kothari, is back with us. More about A.J. in just a few minutes. Right now for Friday, because we had to move Joel's or sell to a different date, it is still an available program date, and there may not be a program. But if anyone listening has a guest that they think would be available to be on a short-term notice, given Joel canceling the show just the other day, I think he did it just before we went on air Sunday, please get a hold of me. Or if anybody out there thinks they should be on the Space Show and has something important, valuable, worth contributing, we'd like to hear from you. So you can email me about that right away, too, drspace@thespaceshow.com. Because it still is an available program. As I said, Joel had to bug out for a different reason. He is coming back with us early in October. That's already booked. And that's about it for announcements today. And I want to get right into our program with Dr. Kothari, because he's 3 hours ahead of me in on the East Coast time. Our toll-free number, and that's important because we do want phone calls, is 866-687-7223. You can also use email, drspace@thespaceshow.com. All of our newsletters are up and running. They are all accurate and updated, and you can check them out. They're on the website, and the email newsletter went out at 6 a.m. Pacific Coast time yesterday morning. If you are not receiving our email newsletter and would like to receive it, make sure I have your email address. Just send it to me, and I will add you to the list. Don't forget that we have a listener-supported program, which is very, very important, because people like you listening to this show make the Space Show happen, because you do financially contribute and support us. We're a 501c3 nonprofit with one giant leap foundation. And, you know, the best way to support us and the easiest way is through PayPal. There is a big PayPal button at the top of our homepage. And those of you who want to use a check and go old school, which is what I like to do, please make your check payable to 1ONE Giant Leap Foundation. And it mails to our new Las Vegas, Nevada home. That address is on our website, as well as PayPal. But if you need it or you need help finding it, please email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com, and I will be happy to get it to you. Please don't send it to the old California address, because the mail forwarding is hit and miss. Your envelope may get returned to you, or it may be dead lettered, and I may never see it, and you may wonder why you never heard from me. So, again, if you're going to use the mail, please mail it to Las Vegas, and if you need help in finding the address or you don't find it, just email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com, and I'll be happy to do it for you. We also have sponsors, and we have advertisers. So if you want to be a sponsor or an advertiser, you get a banner ad running across our homepage. And on longer formatted shows, we usually read a message from the sponsor or the advertiser. On the shorter formatted shows, I just give a shout out, and I'm going to give a shout out tonight because with AJ, who, by the way, is a sponsor with mm-hmm. Astrox, we often just run straight through. And boy, there's not any time to read a message or to get a drink of water or to do anything. He's a fast-talking, action, and chock-full-of-information guy. And I don't want to lose that momentum in the show. But we do want to reach out to and thank Northrop Grumman, the Space Foundation, AJ for his support through his company Astrox, Astrox, AIAA, Moonworks, Celestis, the National Space Society, and Dr. Ben Arroyo joined us, and he's an advertiser more than a sponsor with his two books on developing lunar habitats. If you buy those books through the link on his banners on our homepage, Amazon will donate a portion of the sale of those books to the space show. And we thank Dr. Ben Arroyo for joining us as the sponsor advertiser group. A.J. Kathari, Dr. Kathari, is back with us today. Those of you who listen to a lot of space show programs know A.J. He's president and founder of Astrox, which is an aerospace R&D company in suburban Washington, D.C. His Ph.D. and M.S. is in aerospace engineering from the University of Maryland. He's been involved with a lot of military projects, and you can read about him, okay? Because his bio is up on the website, and it is current. And I, you know, if it's okay with AJ, I just tell you to go read about it. But AJ has a lot to say, and he has really good ideas. And you know, he's going to talk to us again about energy today, and his interest in why his interest is in thorium. We've got some papers on the blog that are his, including a PowerPoint that he recently did, and he will probably reference that, so you may want to look that up on our blog. It's already there. AJ, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you very much, David. It's always enjoyable coming to your program. And I tell you, you mentioned 10 o'clock, 10 p.m. in the East Coast time, I mean, which is where I am, Washington, D.C., suburb. But, you know, I've practiced that and gotten used to it, because every time I've been on your show, it's been 10 o'clock slot, you know, except once. So yeah. I've become quite used to it, so no problem.
Well, that's
if I, in case I go to sleep while I'm talking or something.
I don't think that's possible. I don't think you ever sleep. So what's new, AJ? I mean, I read your posts all the time, and you go to battle. You go to war for your ideas. You fight and you go after people on the Howard Bloom email. It's where a lot of these topics are hashed out and discussed, from safety to energy to space solar power to thorium to going and dealing with China, which is ultimately very aggressive, and what should we do about it.
Right.
You know, so I don't think you ever sleep, but welcome back to the show. Where do you want to lead off tonight?
Well, you know, I want to talk about the energy production, energy problem, energy production, and all that. But I also want to talk about, you know, this talk, really, the one that I would talk about today is thorium, the lifesaver, using thorium molten salt reactor, but for terrestrial, in space, and off-planet use, for all three of those things. And so that's kind of, it's just kind of amazing that this thorium molten salt reactor can contribute to all of those things. So the whole idea is that if we develop this technology for terrestrial use here in U.S., you know, and again, for some of those naysayers, I'm going to emphasize that I'm talking about doing this in USA, not talking about, you know, any doing it in other countries or anything like that. But we need to do this. We need to do that because we need this energy. We have all these problems of climate change and all that the administration has been emphasizing. Namely, I don't know about the, you know, the heating of the planet and all that kind of thing. I'm not getting into that right now. But I do want to get into the CO2 production, you know, or less, or zero CO2 production. And more than that, I want to get into also no pollution for many countries in this world are quite pollution-ridden, and you know, and all that, a lot of that pollution comes from burning coal, burning oil and coal, and you know, all of those things. And if you have ever been to any of those countries, you will see that that's a real killer. I mean, it not only just kills people, but it you know, reduces the life of you know, expectancy of people by at least a couple of decades. That is just like killing people. So I, you know, this is the reason why I have been so excited about this thorium molten salt reactor, especially molten salt reactor with thorium, that it's just it's no brainer. It's just amazing. I cannot believe that we are not doing this here in this country, and of course, you know, solve many of these problems. And some of those problems are outlined by in the administration's latest, whatever you call it, IRA, Inflation Reduction Act. But in any case, a lot of the money, $273 billion or something of that type, is going into, you know, renewable like solar and wind, but nothing into something which is really, really revolutionary. Not evolutionary like the others, but revolutionary. And it will solve all of their problems that they are talking about, and they can take credit for it. I don't care. Take the damn credit, you know, the administration. But do this. Do it. Do something. Do something now, which is something that we can do. And, you know, this thorium, we have, in this country, we have 600,000 tons of thorium. That we can 600,000 ton, which means, you know, 600 million kilograms of thorium. Worldwide, we have 6 million ton of thorium, which is 6 billion kilogram of thorium. And then, you know, I was just trying to compare, and it, the amount of energy that God has put in these neutrons is so much. Why are we not taking advantage of that? We should take advantage of that in the right way, of course. You know, I'm not saying just do it in any way we want, but in the right way. The amount of energy in 1 ton of thorium is equivalent to 5 million barrels of oil. 5 million barrels of oil, for God's sake, you know. And that is equivalent to, you know, if you look at that 6 million ton worldwide that we have, that is equal to 30 trillion barrels of oil. Not how many trillion barrels of oil we have in this world, actual oil, 1.8 trillion. So this is, you know, 15 times more than that number. And we are not doing this? How does that make any sense? This is just absolutely amazing way to do it. And the reason, one of the reasons, of course, everybody is, you know, afraid of nuclear power and all that. But we are doing it wrong. We have been doing it wrong. We have been doing it by using this solid fuel with uranium, and we have been doing it because we have to pressurize that wherever these rods come up, and then the water, heavy water or light water, is obviously being used as a moderator and coolant. Now, obviously, water will boil at 100 degrees centigrade, and so when and the temperature here has to go up to about 250 to get some efficiency out of turbines, and so we have to pressurize those things. And those big domes that we have are like 150 atmosphere pressure. That's why they blow up. That's why they can blow up. But this, with these molten salt reactors, we don't have to have that. It works at atmospheric pressure. We don't need those things. We don't need high pressure. All of those kinds of things. And it's just, it removes so many of the impediments that we have had so far with this nuclear, the Fukushima or Chernobyl or Three Mile Island. None of that can happen here with this
AJ
solution. Yes, sir.
So I heard on the news today that China is building more coal-fired plants and has more coal-producing energy and will have more than the whole world combined. They're not slowing down on coal for their energy. But they have thorium reserves. If this is so great, why isn't China, which, you know, controls its costs because their costs aren't really market, who knows what their costs are for doing anything, why doesn't China go for thorium instead of coal?
China is going for thorium. They've already built some experimental plants in Wuhan province in China. They have already built 2 megawatt plants, and they have it went critical about a year ago, but they are not publishing any of the results. So they are doing it secretly. They are doing it both two different ways in terms of they are doing TMSR as a liquid and also as a solid, the thorium.
Uh-huh.
So that's a different. That's a slightly different thing, but the liquid one that they are doing is very similar to the one that I've been talking about, that Flybe Energy has been talking about, that Kennedy has been talking about, that you know, many other people have been talking about, and it's just not being done. It's asinine, really.
Do we have any experimental thorium plants in the United States?
No, we did have one. Of course, we know that it was a molten salt reactor. It was not thorium, it was uranium. But that was at ORNL at that time, a long time ago. Oak Ridge
right.
National Lab, you know.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, people are writing about it. Let me just say that there was an article that was published about a month ago or 2 months ago in Wall Street Journal, opinion piece. It says that the global nuclear power is coming back because countries are realizing that they can't meet their climate, energy, and national security goals with just renewables and fossil fuels. They cannot. So what are they doing? They are bringing back nuclear. And when you bring back nuclear, it means that you are bringing back the old style, the PWRs, and others also. There are many countries doing it. I mean, Denmark has a company which is Seaborg, which is already actually has a design for a molten salt reactor, thorium molten salt reactor for a 200 megawatt plant. And you look at that picture, and I put that picture on the website, your website there, and you can see that the size of that plant is so much smaller than anything that PWRs, the today's nuclear plants have. We can have a one gigawatt plant in a 100 meter by 100 meter area. It is the one with the smallest footprint. And a lot smaller than the SSP that everybody talks about, and some people are going to get upset with me for mentioning it, but lot smaller than that. You know, it's just absolutely amazing. And there was another article that let me just mention that one also, because it is that is quite interesting. It was in Seattle Journal of Technology. It says that nuclear power offers more energy in less physical space than solar and wind, and yields more energy per pound than fossil fuels. We know that. And we are still not looking at that. We know that, and we are still not doing that. Amazing.
Why do you think that is? I know you have in the past tried to get a hold of various members of Congress and politicians and people at NASA.
I haven't been able to do
and
that,
have,
really.
Right.
You know, I've written to a few, but I haven't tried to. I haven't had...
Why do you think this is dismissed?
Well, I have no idea. Really speaking, I have no idea. I would just simply say that the people who in the know are idiots.
By the way, I want to interrupt you for one other thing. Listeners, I'm getting news reports as we do the show that my old area, Petaluma, I was about 15 miles from Santa Rosa. There's been a 4.4 earthquake, and it's not very big for earthquakes, but it's enough to do some possible damage. But California earthquake construction is pretty good and pretty legitimate and typically not corrupt. So I hope all of it is okay in the freeways and the structures and my friends that are still there and family members are all doing fine. So anyone who's listening, just let you know I'm thinking about you and glad I'm not there.
I'm sure you don't mean that, you know.
Well, you know what? Given their electrical power crap for the past week when the crux of the heat wave was going on and stuff like that, no, I do mean that. I mean, the fact that I was getting browned out, I had to kill different radio shows. You know, I had to have generator power available.
Mm-hmm.
None of that was cheap. I lived under the threat of it, and the fact that we had 110 degree days in Petaluma quite frequently, and it was so expensive to run air conditioning, and then of course they put you on a rolling brownout schedule from like 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah, but
to
David,
10 o'clock
if you have this thorium molten salt reactor all over the country, and this doesn't have to be at the riverbank or near water or anything. It can be there in the Sahara Desert. And, of course, California is a desert.
The flaw in your plan that you cannot find a way to address, nor can I, is the people that make the policy and make the decision don't want it. They want to pursue the New Green Deal. They want to pursue their own ideas.
It's
and
just
even
not
if it
work.
And
it,
even
they may try to do that, they'll realize that it's just not possible.
But they ignore that, and they ignore the fact that they inconvenience people, hurt businesses, cost their economy some money. All of that is ignored for their ideology. And until people figure out a way to get past ideology, our energy problems in the United States are not going to be resolved.
Well, yeah, but we have to shout more and more and more.
Well, that's one strategy. That's one strategy, and maybe it will work if you have a loud enough voice. I honestly have no solution for how you deal with ideologically driven policy that is blind to everything else.
This is so simple that anybody who is willing to listen.
Well, there's the key.
That, yes, there is something there. Okay, you know, they may not be convinced right away. Everybody has, a certain amount of, this kind of opposition to changing their mind.
Is there a thorium advocate center or group that tries to do thorium education?
There is a TEC, I think it is called T, Thorium Energy Consortium. And they have their conference coming up. Probably next month, I think.
Are you going to it?
I'm not sure yet, but I might go to it, yes. Uh-huh.
Well, if you go to it, I'd like you to report on it for the space show.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Listeners, we'd like to hear from you, so you can get a hold of us with emails or phone call. Email is drspace@thespaceshow.com, and telephone number is 866-687-7223. You talk about solar, but most of that's about ground-based solar. What about space solar power?
I don't believe in it. No, I think it is just way, way too. This is what I think of it. Let me be honest here.
Okay.
And I'm sure there will be a lot of people who will want to throw rocks at me and at my idea of thorium because of that, and they have. But, you know, it shouldn't be that way. It's just that this thorium thing is just so much more promising and interesting and just so much shorter term. With this SSP, I've, talked to some people in the in the Air Force and other places, and some places in the Air Force at high level, and they said that it's just they are not interested. But there is an interest in pointed type application for the military, and I can understand that. I'm just talking only about applying it for commercial use and using that for solving the energy problem for the world or the United States or something. They are talking about 10,000 gigawatt plants in geostationary orbit. For God's sake, 10,000 gigawatt plant are all at least 1 kilometer square, solar cell panels. And for each one of them, there will have to be, actually, for the whole world, they are talking about 50,000 of those. But let's talk about just for the United States. 10,000 for the United States. And there will have to be 10,000 rectennas on Earth, almost the same size. And then, obviously, these things is sort of like, in the Middle Ages or long time ago or when, early times, you have a city on a river, and the river is obviously providing plenty of water to the city. And somebody comes and says that I want to build another canal upstream so that I can get more, so I can get water from there into the city. Why? Why would you want to do it that way? You're already getting all the water that you have. We are already getting all the sun that we have and all that. So that's one part of it. And then they'll say, okay, but it's not 24 hours. That is true. It's not 24 hours. It's only for a certain number of hours during the day and
right.
and certain seasons and, cloud covers, etc., those kinds of things. But when you consider all those factors and you multiply all those things, I would say that, and of course then you have to also divide by the fact that this will be the efficiency of this conversion of from sun rays to electricity and all that, and then receiving it here in Rakhina and converting it from DC to AC, etc. Those, all of those things are going to require a certain efficiency. So in total, all of those things together, if the if you build the same thing on Earth, and it's going to cost you, if you build something on compared to what you build there, if that ratio is like 5 to 1, even it's not worth it. It's just simply not worth it. And the other, of course, is what I said. So those two major things, no matter how good your technology will be or is, and how well you can devise this technology or define that technology, how well you can do it, develop that technology, it doesn't matter. I can do the same thing, but those rays are, sun has been nice enough to send all those rays to my Earth. And my Earth's obviously area of Earth facing the sun, the cross-sectional area, is hell of a lot larger than the other one. And why do I want to pick up the sun from somewhere else and then bring it here? I already have it here. But more than that, I think the what I really have is something that God has given, excuse me, when whoever created this universe and planets and sun and all that, and that is neutrons. That is the elements. Those elements, so at least the actinide elements, some of them, contain a lot of energy. Use that. Use that for as long as you can, and within, I mean, those numbers that I quoted, 6 million ton of thorium, and then, of course, the uranium, we have a lot of uranium, but then uranium is available in seawater also. So I was not counting that, but right now, if you don't count that seawater, which is 4 times, 5 times more expensive, to get the uranium out of seawater, still thorium is 500 times more abundant. This thorium is sitting there on the beach of India. People go on the beach and lie on the beach, and nothing happens to them. Thorium's half-life is 14.3 billion years, half-life. So it is not harmful in that form that they have on the... But you can pick it up from there and make, you know, a lot of things with it. And, of course, you know, here it's available in the monazite mines. So all of that is just so much, so different and so much available that if I have to go for a solution, I would go for this right now. Right in 1 second, I would go for this solution. And I don't have to have a high-pressure dome, right? You know, and I'm at 600, 700 degrees centigrade, maybe even higher if you use Sisyphic material. And I'll have a conversion efficiency of more than 45% here to turbine electricity, which is even larger than the power, PWRs have. So all in all, it just makes no sense to not go for this.
Okay. I've got a moderately long email to read you, but it's important. It's from Dr. Dewar, who I think you've talked with before, who is our sort of nuclear power historian.
Okay.
So before you start in, let me finish both of his comments. He's got two comments. Number one, so you can make notes, so you can comment after I've read the note. The thorium reserved argument is problematic, as the counter argument is the extremely large inventory of uranium tails assay at Oak Ridge. This is a UF6 form and has a U-235 content between 0.2 and 0.4%. I lost contact with this decades ago, but don't think much has happened since. But the proposal then was to use laser isotope separation to strip out the residual U-235 and then perhaps enrich it up to 3 to 4%. That's useful for the LWRs. The proposed use of thorium for power generation leaves it as just one voice clamoring for a part of the power grid. To get traction, the end use should be changed from power to process heat for desalinization or processing of waste clogging up our landfills. Make it something that no one else is proposing or doing. If that succeeds, then branch out to power. Hope you're enjoying Nevada, and further hope you have taken a tour of the test site. So I didn't think about taking the tour, Jim, but I'm going to see what I can find out. And I have been trying for a long time to get a desalinization program going, and I thought I was going to get it with a guy named Seth Siegel, who agreed, and then he doesn't answer my calls anymore. And he wrote a book called Let There Be Water, Israel's Solution to the Water-Starved World. Plus, there's people I've been trying to get from Abu Dhabi where they desalinate and pipe it over the water. But the problem is you need energy. And you either have to have unlimited fossil fuel, which California won't do, and they're the closest to the ocean for desalinization, and they won't do nuclear. And that leaves Mexico, which is part of the Colorado River Agreement. And there are ideas to put nuclear plants along Mexico, which would probably do it, or fossil fuel. They have a boatload of oil and through Pemex in Mexico. And then tunnel it and pump it upstream back into Lake Mead under the Colorado River bed and refill Lake Mead faster from desalinated water than what the Colorado River users are taking water out, even in the drought. So what Jim is suggesting is sell the Colorado River users. California might be a hard sell, I don't know, but Mexico may not be, to fund the power to do some crazy project like that, to refill Lake Mead and Lake Powell from the Colorado River with thorium reactors, prove it out, branch it out, and get it going for commercial power. And I think that's what he's talking about in his item number two, which sounds like a hell of a good idea to me.
Well, it's definitely a good idea. No doubt about that. But if I have something I've developed, right now we don't even have a thorium nuclear power plant. We don't even have thorium molten salt reactor or whatever.
We'd have nothing. Yeah, I realize that. Yeah.
So what we need to do first, before we can do this desalination or anything like that, is to have ability to at least do, right now I'm suggesting that we fund university research, we fund institutional research at, $100 million or $1 million or a few million dollar level to iron out all these problems. And I mean, I talked about the advantages of, thorium molten salt reactor, et cetera, but there are some disadvantages too. And we need to work on those disadvantages. One of them, I'll mention it now, okay?
Uh-huh.
If that's okay.
Yeah, go.
Yeah. So one of the problem area is that when you obviously what happens is that when you attack or impart a neutron into the thorium, which is 232 atomic weight and 90 atomic number. It becomes 233 thorium, then it becomes, within a short time, 22 minutes, it'll become protactinium. It'll beta decay and become protactinium, and then again does beta decay and becomes U-233. Now, the problem is that the protactinium, which is also 233, but its atomic number is 91, before it becomes U-233, which is atomic number is 92. So before that, the protactinium is also in that solution. So some of those neutrons will be absorbed by protactinium also, and then that protactinium becomes protactinium 234, and then it gets into a bad situation. So that is one of the problems that that we have with this molten salt reactor with thorium idea, or whether it's a thorium or something else. So, but there is a solution for that, and the solution is that when we have a protactinium tetrafluoride, that is liquid, and the uranium-233 combines with the fluoride, and it becomes it's a gaseous. So you can separate them out. Uranium hexafluoride is gaseous, whereas protactinium tetrafluoride is liquid. So you can separate them out. Once you separate them out, then that particular thing doesn't happen, and all you have is uranium-233 in one pile and protactinium, and you just let the protactinium sit there and stand, and doesn't get any more neutrons, so it'll beta decay into this thing. So those kinds of solutions, those beta decay into, uranium-233. So those kinds of solutions are something that the universities and institutions and labs and, those kinds of people can work on. Once we have those things solved, which are solvable, I mean, these are not showstoppers. These are all solvable, as I mentioned. Then we can have an actual working thorium reactor. And once we have that and people see it, then they'll open it up to other possibilities, not just desalination. I don't think that desalination it's a very good idea, but I still don't think that is really necessarily what the sticking point here is. It's not that we have to find a particular solution and then do that first and then show it that way. Right now, we can't even do that. We are not able to do that. So we need to convince the Department of Energy, NRC, and the administration here, the White House or OSDP or something, to give it a go here. And this is the whole thing here, idea here. So this is the reason why I'm saying that what we are proposing or what we are doing with these LWRs and PWRs and all that, which operate at high extreme pressures and operate at low temperature, which is like 250 to 350 degrees C, and this one is at 700 or 800, and if you use CSIC, it can operate at 1200. We need to do, what we need to do is to characterize the CSIC material that I'm talking about for higher temperatures. Characterize it for time, characterize, I mean, corrosion, characterize it for, you know, neutron flux, and all of those kinds of things. Before we, all of that can be done at, you know, university level, SBIRs, SBTRs, all of those things. They should be funded by, and then, you know, I'm going to talk today, a little bit later, about its application to space. So there, even Space Force comes into play. NASA comes into play. All of those things are coming into play. And, I'm doing something else somewhere else, which I cannot talk about right now. But, you know, all of these kinds of technologies, component-level technologies, TRL of the component-level technologies, need to be brought up.
You have
which is what we need to do.
You have a caller. You want to take the caller?
Sure.
Hi, caller. Welcome to our program tonight. Who are you and where are you, please?
This is John in Fort Worth.
Hi, John. Welcome.
Yeah. I was on the thorium reactor. When you're starting off with one of these things, okay, you got thorium 232. Okay, yeah. How do you get this thing going in the first place? Do you start off seeding with U-235?
Yes,
to get it going, and then it develops U-233?
This thing is also something that can use up the waste materials that we have lying 90,000 tons lying around in the country. Slowly, slowly we can use that. Those waste materials, which are radioactive, can be the initial neutron producers. And once we start the neutron production in this solvent, in this solution, it'll continue because the uranium-233, when it fissions, I mean, it'll continue after 27 days after the fission occurs. But it'll happen. And once it happens, then the additional neutrons, it creates 2 to 3 neutrons per fission. And so the additional 2 to 3 neutrons which are created will, you know, continue the chain reaction process. But to begin with, you will need something like this, you know. And you know, brought up an important point. So this is actually somebody, I think it's Moltex in Canada, which is actually just going to do molten salt reactor using the waste products only, you know. And so all the so basically it eats up the waste products for lunch, you know. And so that's also a plus. But molten salt reactors in general, and they don't have to be thorium, but molten salt reactor is obviously molten salt reactor is not the same as, you know, thorium. And so molten salt reactors themselves can be used for, can be fueled by many different things. I mean, the ORNL was uranium-235 to begin with that they used in the second 233. But it can be fueled by what you just mentioned also, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'd say you need something to get it going, because once you get it going, then it breeds its own fuel after that.
Yes.
So
yes, right. After that, it does that. And that's exactly what I'm suggesting for the moon also. Moon, they have found some thorium. Chang'e 2 has found some thorium on the moon. So if we were to start, you know, take, say, 1 kilogram of thorium from here, maybe 1 kilogram of uranium-233 or however, take that from here, put that into the reactor, and then continue, then it will automatically continue to fuel itself. And then the additional thorium as you... That'll happen later. I mean, I'm talking about something which might happen 30 years from now or something, 40 years from now. But, you know, we pick up those that thorium material, mine that, and use that, and then this just keeps going. Here on Earth, also, it just keeps going. It's just a, it's a chain reaction afterwards, you know. And so it's just, right, it's just amazing. It's just so amazing that I cannot believe that we are not doing this. I mean, what does it take? What does it take for people to open their eyes?
It seems like it would make sense to go ahead and build some prototypes of the thorium cycle and...
Right.
And to get going with it and get some experience with it, I mean, it's...
Yes, exactly. You know, that's what we need to do. But, you know, they are not giving permission for, you know, for universities to, even universities to do that. I think that they have given permission for up to 1 megawatt plant. And that's why I'm going to be working with university here, Maryland, to do something, maybe, in future. So... So anyway, I think what you brought up a very good point here. No? So thank you.
Okay, well, just kind of curious. The other thing I'm wondering is, okay, what about the waste products? I mean, okay, after you've fissioned the U-233 and the the normal stuff, what happens to the waste products? Does this thing eventually kind of pollute the process, or how are they removed, or?
No, actually, they can stay there for a long time, but it fissions into two elements, xenon and strontium, and you know, creates some other actinides, and some of these other actinides that it creates are actually very useful for medical use, for diagnostics use, you know.
Xenon is a gas, then?
And those are very good for that. For, as far as the strontium and the xenon are concerned, the half-life of those things, I mean, obviously they'll be radioactive just like uranium-235 things, but the half-life of that, those are in thousands of years as opposed to the uranium products, which are hundreds of thousands of years. That we have waste products. So we will not even have a waste product problem. It's absolutely amazing. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are problems. I'm sure that there will be, you know, technical problems and, you know, all those things. But this is what we are here for. What are we here for? We are here to solve this problem. We are engineers, you know. Stupid engineers.
Yeah, I heard that. Was Bill Gates interested in one of these, some kind of a thorium project, or was I wrong about that?
No, that is not correct. He's doing TerraPower. He's funding a company. He was interested in molten salt, but he's interested in molten salt or liquid. I'm not sure. Metal. I don't remember now. But basically, it was to store heat when that particular... the California's grid is offline or something like that, you know? And so they're putting up a plant in Wyoming for that, you know.
Right.
And there is a lot of money in there for TerraPower. That's a different thing. That's not
different project.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, at any rate, sounds interesting. I'll see if anybody else wants to call in. But that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you. Thank you, John.
Listeners, you can follow up John and call in if you would like to talk to AJ, whatever your opinion is. 1-866-687-7223. And email remains drspace@thespaceshow.com. Do any universe... Well, I'll take a call and then I'll go to the question.
You got somebody.
Good afternoon. Good evening, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you and where are you, please?
This is Marshall. John beat me this time.
How you doing, Marshall?
Just fine. I've always thought the thorium reaction was very interesting, but the new thing in regular nuclear reactors are the small modular reactors that can be moved around by a big semi truck, and they have power range from 1 to 20 megawatts, and that's the direction I kind of see things going. Is a thorium reactor possible to get it down to that size to where you might make it a...
It is possible. It can be scaled up or down.
It can scale down or up is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It will be scaled up or down. And actually, can you hear me? Is it John?
Yes.
No, Marshall. Marshall is his name.
Marshall, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so it can be scaled up or down as we want. And actually, you know, one of my ideas is to put this on cislunar space and also on the moon, in which I should also talk about that in a few minutes, David.
Okay.
But one of those ideas that requires, of course, NASA is interested at this point in time in a really small one, 40 kilowatt size. Let's say it's 100 kilowatt size or something. So to make it small, you know, we can even do a 3D printing of these pipes, channels that we will have to have, and 3D printing of the graphite put that into a small scale, 30 centimeter by 30 centimeter type of 30 centimeter cube type of thing, and that will create, you know, small power. So it can be scaled. There is really no reason why it cannot be scaled down, at least to that level. I don't know about, you know, micro watt type of a thing, and maybe not, but at least up to that level of a few kilowatt type of a power to gigawatt type of power. It can be scaled down or up. There's really nothing I see where it cannot be done.
So,
the modular reactor are becoming big, but, you know, we can do the same thing with this. Put this in on trucks and go from place to place. It can be used for military. It can be used for you know, powering the base or whatever, those types of things. That actually, I think the Department of Defense recently gave a contract to Rolls-Royce, $100 million contract to Rolls-Royce for, I think those are solid fuel mini reactors, or micro reactors, I'm not sure, but small reactors.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do the same thing with this liquid one also.
My thought is, I like to think in grain truck size, because that's what, there's a lot of them around here. But basically, you know, something like four or 5 meters across, I presume it's a cylinder, and, you know, 15, 20 meters long, and something that could be launched by, if nothing else, Falcon Heavy. How much power could you get out of something that size?
Well, maybe, you know, there's a picture that I have left at the website about the Seaborg power plant that they have designed. That's a 200 megawatt size power plant, and that one is about 6 meter by 3 or 4 meter type of a size. That's a 200 megawatt plant, and that's approximately what you're talking about, no? 200 megawatt electric plant. That's what approximately what you're talking about, no? And now that particular size does not include the turbine portion or electricity production portion. That would be another few meters by few meters or whatever it would be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But just the nuclear reactor, the reactor is about 6 meter tall, 3 meter in diameter, and of course 3 meter wide. Then there is a heat exchanger next to it, and that heat exchanger altogether will be like, all of them together will be about 6 meters. That's why I quoted 6 meter by 6 meter by 3 meter. So there will be a heat exchanger. What happens is that in this case, the molten salt reactor contains, like for any nuclear plant, this InfoDigi modular one that you're talking about. And there's a company called NuScale in Washington State, which is also building these, small reactors. And actually, they have been given permission to give some to some of these Eastern European countries. I can't remember the name of the country. But anyway, Croatia, I think, maybe, you know, something like that. So those, or sell them to them. So those approximately are the size. So you can imagine that if I have something that can go on a grain truck, which would be of this size, I don't know the weight of this thing. I have not weighed it out or anything like that, so I don't know the weight yet. We are hoping to do that soon. I don't know the weight, but I'm sure that Falcon Heavy can handle it, you know, fairly well. Falcon Heavy can take 60,000 kilograms, I think it is, to Rio, if all three boosters are expended. If only one is expended, the middle, the core one, then it can take about 50, and if none of them are expended, so it is completely reusable, then it's about 38 tons.
Which means Starship would have no problem at all.
Oh, Starship would have no problem at all, yeah.
Yeah.
Starship doesn't exist right now, so I don't know. I mean, it almost exists, but not quite. But anyway, yeah, so I think that, you know, hope that answered some of your question.
Yeah. Well, it implies that it's not a real problem to get enough power on the moon to start a mining operation.
And no, it's not.
Only the first
it is not enough. It is not a big problem to do that if we, you know, decide to do this. It's just that we are full of idiots in this country. Excuse me.
I will stop right there before I say something I shouldn't. So, good night, everybody.
Thank you, Marshall, for your call.
Excuse me. I also wanted to mention, David, that a number of companies in the world who are working on it are quite a few now, you know, but at least 7-8 companies around the world. Thorcon in Netherlands, of course, Flybe here, Kirk Sorensen's company, and then Kairos in Alameda, California, actually is doing something. They are doing molten salt Flybe's coolant, but they are doing it with TRISO fuel pebbles, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so, and Moltex, of course, I mentioned in Canada, New Brunswick, Canada, and they are doing stable salt reactor waste burner, it's called. It's SSRW. And, of course, there is TerraPower, which we talked about already with Bill Gates, and then Terrestrial Energy, also in Canada. And Seaborg, of course, Seaborg is doing some pretty good, pretty interesting things in Denmark, Copenhagen. And, of course, we have Thorcon, which is in the Netherlands, but they are working with Indonesia and all those. So you know, I think that things are happening, but not so much in this country.
Well, it's probably not a priority of this country, is it?
Yeah. Like I said, the last thing I said here.
What are your advocacy steps? What are you actually working to do to change this situation in America? So limit the discussion to America. And does space fit into America, or is space broader than America?
Well, now that you mentioned space, before I answer your question, maybe I should get into space a little bit here. No?
Okay.
Yeah? Okay.
Go for it.
So, let's see. That space thing is in the last few slides of my presentation that I have put on that thing. And
on the PowerPoint.
What it is that we had DARPA at one time. You all know that. and that NERVA was able to create 880 to 900 seconds of ISP with hydrogen as a propellant, fuel propellant. But that was done with rods of atomic, you know, power rods, not molten salt or anything like that. Now, what I'm thinking is that instead, if we do this with molten salt, and if we use something like C6 as container, we can up the temperature to about 1200 degrees centigrade, maybe a little bit more. Now, if we can do that, I mean, we know that the NERVA program created that kind of thing because of they were able to do up to 2700 degrees temperature. Now, with this, if I can go up to 1200 centigrade, and then my ISP in that case, and I'm able to heat my hydrogen using these kind of heaters, my ISP would be at something of the order of 800, let's say, 800 seconds, which is not bad, which is pretty good. Now, the advantage here is that with something like NERVA or something like that, I can't think of what we can do. But with this, you can do a repurposing of this reactor. You use this, you put this reactor in the back of the rocket that you design, and I have a picture in there of one of the rockets that I designed, and it's a New Glenn's upper stage, basically, 41 meter long, etc., those kinds of things. So that the New Glenn upper stage is, instead of using now hydrogen and LOX, it's New Glenn's upper stage is uses BE3 engine. New Glenn's, because New Glenn has not flown, and I have no idea if they are ever going to fly, but I'm just saying that New Glenn's upper stage uses BE3 engine, which is Hydrolox engine. Now, and of course the lower stage uses BE4 engine, which is the methane engine. So BE3 engine, which is Hydrolox engine, instead of having, you know, you normally have LOX tanks at the bottom and hydrogen tank on the top, above that. So instead of the LOX tank, now you don't carry the LOX at all. You have the hydrogen for propellant. You put this TMSR, the thorium molten salt reactor, or UNM-233 molten salt reactor, in there. That can again heat using heat exchangers, heating chamber, same as what we did before with NERVA. Heat the hydrogen, which is, you know, stored above it, and expand it in a nozzle, creating, like, whatever, 820 seconds of ISP. I can use that in a rocket. Now, supposing I take that rocket, and this is called repurposing. I take that rocket, I land that on the moon, and that rocket, now the nuclear power plant part of it, this, I don't need the propellant or propulsion anymore, but the nuclear power plant part will provide me energy, continue to provide me energy, and now I can connect it to a turbine machinery that I've taken with me, you know, in the payload or some other way. And then I can just run a turbine there in a closed CO2 loop. If I do that, then I can create electricity for all those people living there on the moon, or electricity for powering my, you know, equipment, power plants, etc., those kinds of things, equipment there. So I can do that. I can also, if I don't create electricity, I can just use it directly to heat the regolith or, you know, the ice that you have dug up melt it, melt it. And so I can do, you know, kill two birds with one stone here, you know, with this type of an idea, with the molten salt reactor idea. So this is the whole thing. This is the last couple of slides in my presentation. You know.
What about applications for Mars or for in-space orbiting stations?
Yes, so same thing. You know, why not? I mean, I can do whatever I mentioned about doing on the moon. I can do the same thing on Mars, obviously, right? You know, I can provide electricity there for turbine. I can also use this. Oh, another thing I was also mentioned is that because I'm able to heat hydrogen, I can then heat the atmosphere on Mars also, whatever, mostly carbon dioxide. I can heat that and expand that through a nozzle, creating thrust. If I do that, I did some calculation with that. With 10 grams of thorium or uranium-233, I can orbit around Mars one time. 10 grams. Just 10 grams of thorium. 10 grams of thorium, I can go around Mars one time. So I can use this, I can create this kind of a vehicle there on Mars. And, of course, we'll have to figure out how to take off and land, et cetera, those kinds of things. So that'll come later. But eventually, these kinds of vehicles will be flying on Mars, can be flying on Mars to map, to do experiments, to go back and forth. You know, all of those kinds of things can be done. So it is just absolutely amazing number of possibilities and solutions there.
Well, so go back to my question, and how do you plan to raise the collective awareness and to get this into policy?
Well, you know, by coming on your show every day, you know, for example.
By every day, okay. We'll call it the space show for thorium show, right?
Yeah, we have to start talking about this thing and start discussing and become loud about it and, you know, let people know. And we are not lying here, you know, we are being very truthful here. And so I think we have honesty on our side. So we should be able to do this and should be able to convince more and more. The numbers will grow, and they'll grow exponentially, of course, or geometrically at least, about, you know, convincing people.
You know, the space show is 21 years old, and early in space show history, I met Kirk at a conference in L.A., and he and thorium advocates introduced me to thorium. It's 20, let's say it was 19 years ago, 20 years ago.
Right,
and I wanted Kirk to be on the show many, many times, and it's just never worked out. But anyway, I don't know.
Did you have another call there?
Yeah, but I don't know if we're any further along in 20 years. And I don't know if you can answer that or not, but
well, actually,
that's troubling.
I think that a lot more people are talking about this than 10 years ago. You know? I mean, even Kirk, you may have met him 20 years ago, but he was not talking about this really. He started his company only in 2011.
No, he was doing. So he was working for another company, which is why
he was working for NASA.
Yeah, and that's why he couldn't come on the show and talk about it. I understand that.
Yeah.
So Harris something or Brown something. Anyway, and that's why. I am fully aware of all of that. But if this is so good, it just seems to me that it would have at least been demoed. It would have at least, you know,
we cannot demo it because we are not getting permission from NRC to do something, you know, to build something, even small, 2-megawatt plant or anything, not getting permission from them. That is up to the administration to tell the NRC to give permission.
Well, start with
something small, like I said, in universities. You know. Start with something small.
Let's see who your caller is, okay?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get lucky. Maybe it'll be Kirk. Let me see my caller ID. No, it doesn't tell me. Hi, caller. Welcome to our program tonight. Who are you and where are you, please?
This is Captain Kirk from Fremont, California.
Captain Kirk.
Oh.
How does Captain Kirk play into this? Was thorium
part of
Star Trek?
I think this is Fremont John, right?
No, he has a new name. His new name. His new name is Gravity Prescription John because he believes we need to figure out the gravity prescription to have human space settlement. And he's like a broken record. He's faithful to the end. So we renamed him to gravity prescription.
What does that mean, gravity prescription?
tonight I'm Thor the Lifesaver.
Oh, you okay.
go for it.
Okay, so I'm Thor the Lifesaver number two then, you know.
So what is your comment or question, John?
Well, I just I just like to thank AJ for collaborating with me on my blog post, and I've posted it on your blog. So I'm doing my part to promote the molten salt reactor, thorium molten salt reactor.
Yeah, but what do you think when AJ goes after space solar power? Because you're a big space solar power guy.
Well, one thing at a time. You know, I mean,
don't try to create fights here, David. You're trying to create a fight.
No, I'm just, you know, good radio.
It's good TV and good radio both, I guess. no, but I
mean
that.
I'm a big solar power, space solar power guy. I don't exclude anything from our energy mix, including the continued use of fossil fuels. I don't believe in hurting people. And
No, I'm not excluding that. I think that we'll continue to use that in future also. I'm even more than the CO2 and all those other things that the fossil fuels, other things create. My feeling is that we need to leave some of these fossil fuels behind for the generations that may come, you know, 10 generation from now or whatever. We have to leave some of that behind. We cannot just use it all up. That is so selfish, you know.
Well, if we bring other sources of reliable power and they're economic, then we will gradually attrition out of coal
gradually,
and oil to thorium to space solar power.
Mean, I don't want to do this. Just willy-nilly just take that and, you know, say that, okay, I'm just going to use up everything. I'm just not going to.
No, I don't think anyone's advocating for that. But I think as you develop other things that come online that have the capability of providing the kind of power we need 24/7.
Yeah, I understand. No, I'm not suggesting that people are, anybody is suggesting that. I'm saying that, even for that reason, that I want to leave some of this behind, that I want to, for that reason, I want to stop using fossil fuels now. Then that means that I have to have some other means of doing it, and we need to do research and do development in other forms. I would just like to, you know, reduce the fossil fuel use considerably so that it leaves, millions of barrels of oil behind for other generations to use. I don't want to be selfish to just use it up. That's all I'm saying, you know.
Well,
so I want to use that as a reason. I don't even care if I use climate change as the reason, or somebody uses climate change as the reason, or something. I don't know, or CO2 as the reason. I want to do this because I want to do this nuclear. I want to do other fusion, other possible energy sources and stuff for that reason, you know, that I don't want to be so selfish.
Okay. How is thorium going to power a car, or what are we going to do for transportation?
Oh, I would think that what is going to happen most likely is that thorium will power create electricity, and my guess is that majority of the vehicles of the world will become electric cars or electric vehicles. Majority meaning 80-90%, something like that. Over, you know, I don't know over how many years, but that'll be fine, you know. But that energy should not come from coal. That is crap. No, that is bullshit. Excuse me. Because then you are doing the same thing that you would have otherwise done with just using fossil fuel to power the car. It should be coming from some other means, of creating electricity, such as TMSR, thorium-powered or nuclear-powered energy and all that.
So then I take it you would be supportive of doing what it takes to modernize and expand the capacity and the sources of power for our grid, if you're thinking electric cars are going to be that plentiful.
I would not have any objection to that if, you know, whatever is necessary. I think the grid right now here is in a better shape than in many other countries, but I think most of our countries also will have to have electric-powered vehicles also. So they will probably need this even more than, you know, than here. But anyway, I don't know. I haven't thought too much about that, but off the cuff, I would not be, it would not be an objectionable thing for me at all. You know.
John, do you have more for AJ?
I have a ton.
Well, go for it.
AJ, you mentioned that, you know, we want to get the NRC and DOE to allow smaller size experimental reactors, you know, less than 2 megawatts at
yes.
universities and research institutions.
Yes.
Does someone need to apply? How do we get them to approve that? Is there an application process for that? Or, I mean, what needs to be done so that we can get that started?
Oh, God, that's a very good question, and I don't have an answer for that per se. I have not looked into that at all. This is just something that I'm saying because of what I'd heard from other people that or read on the Internet that they're not allowing more than, 2 meg or maybe even 1 megawatt, 1 megawatt plant. There is one university, I think, in Washington State which has approximately 1 megawatt plant, I think, in TMSR. I don't remember the name, but it's in Washington State somewhere. Maybe it's University of Washington itself. But, you know, something like that needs to be done. Many universities actually walked away from nuclear about 10 years ago after Fukushima, you know.
Right.
You know, University of Maryland had, for example, a nuclear engineering department. They shut it down. They still have a reactor on campus. They have a reactor on campus. You know, I don't know how much, whether it's actually working or not. I went and saw it. It's a huge thing, you know. And what we are talking about here is a small thing which can, you know, fit in a room, basically. But, you know, we need to do this thing and start this thing. I mean, for God's sake, what are we doing here? What are we doing? This thing has an application.
AJ,
yeah.
AJ,
yeah.
Do you know the guy at Thrive Energy?
I do know him, and I mean, his name was just mentioned by David. I mean, I do know him. Talked with him a couple of times.
I'm just wondering if you. There's not much on their website. I'm just wondering how close they are to getting a prototype liquid fluoride thorium reactor going.
I don't know. I think they're fairly close-lipped about it, you know, and understandably so, you know, because I think that he's probably making, my guess is he's making good progress. I've listened to his talks and stuff, and they're pretty good, you know. He had one talk in... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I wonder if he probably knows the regulatory pathways and may be able to maybe get some contacts at NRC or DOE to
I talked with him some time ago when he told me that they are just not giving the permission. It's very difficult to fight with them.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Actually, you know, I think that my feeling is that he has been talking to his senator, Tuberville, who is from Alabama, And, you know, Flybe Energy is, of course, located in Huntsville, Alabama, and is a senator, the new senator there, Tuberville, is pretty supportive of, I mean, he's the one who introduced a bill in Congress to save the uranium-233 that has been created from all these things that they were going to just destroy, you know. And so I think that that may have gone through. Actually, I'm not sure. But he introduced that bill along with somebody, maybe Roger Marshall from another senator, or maybe somebody from Democrat side. So
that was he's doing his
political work, I presume. The Flybe Energy, they are doing their political work, and we all need to do this. I mean, this is just ridiculous. This is just absolutely ridiculous.
I have another question. So the separation process for removing protactinium-234, this is necessary because it's a gamma ray emitter, right? So that's problematic for radiation.
It is problematic for radiation. It's for that reason. But you still do not want to have the neutron being absorbed by protactinium, whatever it may lead to, but you don't want, because it reduces the neutron efficiency in that case. No? And so you want to use the neutrons as much as possible to impart or attack uranium-233 as much as possible, not the protactinium.
Right.
Yeah.
So this separation process kind of complicates the whole design, and I'm just wondering how is that going to work in the space application? Are you going to have a separate separation facility for that?
That's a good. So there are two ways of that people have been doing it, online and offline. So you can do it offline, meaning you have a chemical processing plant which is protected, you know, secured and all that, because it'll contain uranium-233. And in any case, it can be offline in that sense, or it can be online, which is, within the loop itself. So when you have, and the thing is that particular thing is complicated and also, it might be heavy. So for space application, I would suggest that we use uranium-233 itself, which has been separated, and the uranium-233 is the one that will then fission. That is the one that fissions anyway. So the uranium-233, which has been created and separated, is the one that will feed these space applications. Let's say you want to feed that to go to the moon or something, and now obviously you can use that to go to the moon and then continue to use that for other things, or you can use it for going to Mars and continue to, or cislunar space and continue to use that after we have made this better, this process, separating it out better, perfected it more, then we can start putting it into the loop itself.
So you want to get us past the sort of prototype era so that we can start rolling it out for commercial.
Oh yeah, I do want to, but before we do that, we have to do the prototype first.
Yes. You know? Yeah. So you're focused on the prototype era.
Well, I'm focused only because these people are, creating a big hindrance here and not allowing it to be larger. It could be if they don't create this problem and allow people to do a little bit larger, let's say 10 megawatt type of a plant or a couple of, you know, something like that. I'm sure that the people like FLIBE and people like other companies will jump in and do that.
You have a question on this very subject from Barbara in Denver, and she says if they did give out permits much more willingly, somebody's got a computer that is binging at us.
That is mine.
Barbara, I lost my place in reading her note. Anyway, she says, why do you think that private money or money would flow into building prototype thorium reactors?
Can you repeat that?
Barbara's in Denver. And
she
says,
what did she say?
If they were giving out approvals, why do you think there would be funding for building prototype types of thorium reactors?
Why would the government do that?
Which she didn't specify, government or private money. She wants to know why you think that there would be money available to start building prototype thorium reactors.
We get the permission, and then government gives contract for doing this kind of work, SBIR, STTR.
So you think the people would start applying for government money, and the government would fund the basic thorium research.
Government will have to fund the basic thorium research.
Well, they don't have to.
Investors are not going to fund it. Government has to fund the basic thorium research, and then once some of these things are proven, then the investors will jump in with 2 feet, with both feet, because this is going to solve problem for the entire country for energy. You're not going to require anything after this. You're not going to require oil. You're not going to require coal. I made two enemies already right now, you know. But you're not going to require coal. You're not going to require oil. You're not going to require anything else. And you can do this. All the energy, or let's say at least 60-70% can come from the thorium molten salt reactor.
Okay.
What I would do is to put hundred salt, molten salt reactors in 100 places, or maybe even 500 places around the country. They don't have to be near water. They can be, you know, far away. They can be in the desert of Arizona or California or whatever. But they don't have to be near water. They can be, but they don't have to be. And if something goes wrong, there is a drain tank underneath, which is underground, which just, you know, goes into the drain tank. Anyway, one gigawatt reactors will supply 70-80% of electric need of this country. And I bet you we can build them for a lot cheaper than anything else, because these are so small. These 1 gigawatt plants are 10 meter by 10 meter by 10 meter. At the most, I would say that, you know, allowing for everything else, gardening and landscaping and all that, we are talking about a 100 meter by 100 meter plot. You know, that is just, you know, 300 feet by 300 feet. You can have a 1 gigawatt plant in that space. What more do you want? What more does anybody want? Really?
John, what more do you want?
Well, I'll get off the line and see if anyone else wants to call in. It's been a pleasure, AJ.
I've heard from you before, as Fremont John, you know, before, earlier, not today, but, you know, early on, different talks, and finally nice to meet you.
Yeah, hopefully one day we can do it in person. So,
yeah.
I don't know, do you ever make it out to ISDC?
Maybe. Tomorrow, actually, I'm going to U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which are doing a space day. So that should be pretty interesting. Not ISDC, but it's U.S. Chambers, you know, Aerospace Day.
Okay. John, thanks for calling in. Appreciate
it. Thank
you, okay?
Thank you, John.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Yeah.
We're pretty much at the end of...
Yeah, we had a kind of...
And I know it's getting up there late for you.
Yeah.
Are you thinking of coming to AIAA's Ascend conference in October?
Not really, no. Because things all become so expensive.
I know they are, but that's in Las Vegas. It'd be fun to meet you.
Oh, it is in Las Vegas? Oh,
yeah.
I see.
Yeah, it is in Las Vegas. So.
Oh, so you'll be coming to. Obviously, you are there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm going to commute to and from. I'm not too far away from where it is.
Far away,
so,
yeah, right. Yeah,
in the, living and commuting, even at the price of gasoline, is a hell of a lot cheaper than their hotel rate. So,
oh, yeah, no, of course, yeah.
You know, I could get maybe 20 tanks of gasoline for one night of...
How far are you from there?
From that part of the strip, if there's no traffic, maybe 20, 25 minutes.
Oh, no, I mean, you live in Las Vegas itself?
Yeah, I live in the north-central, sort of southwestern part of Las Vegas. So to get to that part of the strip, maybe 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
So if you come, we get a chance to meet in person. If you go to this Thorium conference that you mentioned earlier, do let me know. I'd love to have you report back to us as to what you thought of it.
Sure. If I go, I will let you know.
And if Kirk is there, maybe you can get him to come on the space show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know. I'm sure that you have asked him.
I haven't asked him in a couple of years, but...
You should ask him.
Maybe I'll ask him. I don't have a current email from him, but there is an info email on his website, so...
Yeah,
I can.
I have some things I can...
Well, if you've got contact for him, send it to me, and I'll send him another invitation.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Tell him we talked a lot about his activities with you on the show.
Yes,
tonight.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
All right, well, listen, I want to thank you for... coming on. I hope some people with influence listen. And, I hope we do something other than tilt at windmills, right?
Yeah, it's just absolutely amazing to be incredible that we have something in our hand. Bird in hand is, they are saying, whatever, bird in hand, what two in the bush.
Yeah.
And we are letting go of the bird in hand, you know. So, it's
absolutely.
Just amazing to me. Unbelievable.
All right. Well, we will stay in touch, and I'll send you the recording, and look forward to talking to you again down the road.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, and listeners, thank you again for calling and for emailing. And Eric Berger is with us on Hotel Mars tomorrow, and hopefully John will archive that shortly. Have you ever been on Bachelor Show with me?
No, I would like to do that.
How about maybe I can convince him to do a Thorium show with you?
Yes. Oh, that would be good, because then, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, these kinds of things can go, and then I can be
now,
on...
That's a very different format, because he asks very controlled questions.
Yeah, well, that's fine. I mean, I'll just learn what it is, but, you know, these kinds of things, because I think he has some connection with, or at least, you know...
He's with CBS.
You know, people like... You know, Tucker Carlson or somebody, some people like that who are interested in these kind of subjects.
Well, and he's on the CBS network, so you'll get pretty wide distribution. I'll see if he's interested in doing a Thorium Energy show.
Very good.
And see what he says.
All
right, we will be in touch, and thank you very much. And listeners, again, if you have somebody who can be ready at the last minute, the Friday program is available since Joel had to change plans on Sunday. Or if you have something that you think would be contributing to the Space Show discussion, send me an email, drspace@thespaceshow.com. Everybody have a great rest of the week.
Well, it was an exciting show, I must say.
And we thank AJ for being with us, and good night from Dr. Kothari, David, and the Space Show. And as always, everybody, keep looking up.
Yes.
Goodbye again.
Take care. Bye-bye.